Hare Krishna. Vansha kalpataru vaisya kripa sindhuvai vacha vaditanam pavanibhyo vaishnavibhyo namo namaha. Namaum Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pestaya Bhutale Simate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gaudavani Pacharini Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Bhaskatyadi Satayane Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Arvaita Garadha Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. I welcome all of you affectionately for the last installment of Utkalika Valari. I need to say that I will continue on this subject in a few days in the online Govardhan retreat, and maybe Gaurahari can supply us with a link where this can be viewed. This subject is the same, developing divine aspirations, but the content is different. I take different verses from Utkalika Valari. Before starting today's session, I would like to say that in spiritual life, but also in the life in general, there's a great tendency in us to postpone what we might have to do to a later day. It is said, tomorrow is a mystical land of all my opportunities, but 99% of the people do not know to visit this land of tomorrow. They always say, someday I will keep all the rules of devotional service. Someday I will maybe become more advanced. I will get up earlier. Someday in the future I will actually give my best on the spiritual path. But you know, there are 7 days in a week, and someday is unfortunately not part of these 7 days. In other words, if one postpones, the danger is that one will never actually do it. All those who have achieved anything in their spiritual life, insights, realizations, detachment, attachment to Krishna, they have attained this in small installments, like every day they have done the chanting, every day they have read in the Bhagavatam. Therefore, this nityam, or regular reading in the Bhagavatam, this regular spirituality, this constant, persistent spirituality, that will give results. I'm saying this that because divine aspirations are cultivated really over a longer period of time by regular daily installments of spiritual practice, and also following the necessary restraints from material life, then you will get something. Of course. Krishna can also drop the sweet mango of Krishna consciousness right from the sky, and it can fall suddenly on your head, and you are enlightened. This is called Kripa Shakti, which comes either through devotees or through the Lord. But it is safer if we don't wait for this to happen, but do regular installments in our spiritual life. In Utkalika Valari, text number 31, we get a little taste of this. Pradeshinim mukakwa devinikshipan janomu manabhuvi putarochaso prasidatam kshanamadipo prasidatam drisho puras puratu tadit kanachavi. I'm placing my forefinger into my mouth, and persistently I'm crying out to you in this forest of Vrindavan, O Lord, for just a short moment, be merciful, be merciful. I realized that maybe a close contact is not yet possible for me because of my innumerable mistakes. I cannot expect that you take me very close to you. But I request you, nevertheless, that at least from a distance, from far off, you become visible to me. And then Rupa Goswami gives this beautiful example. Just like a person may stand here, then 5 kilometers in front of him, there may be a a bank of rain clouds approaching. And in that bank, there's a streak of lightning. In the same way, from very far away, from a distance, I would like to see the beautiful form of Srimati Radharani, which is effulgent like a streak of lightning, the form which rests in the arms of Lord Krishna, just like the lightning rests in the lap of the rain cloud. This is my desire. Rupa Goswami says he's placing his forefinger in his hand, in the hole of his mouth. What is that all about? It's a gesture of keenness. When you make this gesture, it means just like a calf is going after the cow in order to drink from its udder. When in Vedic times you place the finger, you say, "I am the calf, and you are the wish-fulfilling cow, and I'm going after you. I'm going behind you, trying to have your kind mercy." Here we are reminded, really, of an earlier point, that Krishna consciousness is available to those whose heart has been melted and who are now very eager. And he says, "I'm persisting in my request. I'm not giving up." And this is a little bit the mood of the devotee who wishes to cultivate his divine aspirations. Especially the sacred land of Vrindavan yields itself to develop these divine aspirations, because in this Vrindavan there are many wish-fulfilling trees. And when you are doing, for instance, Govardhan Parikrama, and you come through the forest near Puchari, then you move down through Jatipur and then take the forested path, you walk under many kalpavriksha trees, and the they fulfill the desires. There's a story which the bridge busies tell. There was once a simple man. He was entering the forest of Vrindavan. He was a wood collector. But somehow he felt so tired that day and he could not collect a lot of wood. And so the evening approached and he just spoke this desire, "Oh, I would like to have wood." And trrrt, 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 a whole heap of wood manifested. One piece of wood after the other fell on this, and the woodcutter thought, "Wow, I'm under Kalpa Vriksha, or wish fulfilling trees. Let me have another wish. I would like to have some gulab jamun sweets." Blop, blop, blop. His mouth was filled with these beautiful sweets. "Oh, I would like to have a bed to rest and sleep, and tomorrow I carry the wood home." A bed was there and he could lay down. Yes, I'm deeply convinced that many of my spiritual desires have been come true, not because of my qualifications, but because of the wish-fulfilling atmosphere of Vrindavan, where the land, the trees, everything is made out of this substance of consciousness, wish-fulfilling consciousness. So, I was saying that if you wish to have a spiritual fulfillment, please study your day. What do you place into the pot of your day, so to say? This morning we heard about the idea of a temple being a pot that needs to be filled with auspicious hearing and chanting. So think of your day also as a pot. What do you fill in this pot? Because the accumulated effect of your sadhana, that will give you the fruits which you so much desire. And this is why we find Rupa Goswami persistently. He has been in the forest of Vrindavan for maybe 40 years or so, very long, and has every day worshipped the Lord of his heart. So his life is now coming to the fruition, where he asks for the sweet darshan of Krishna. I want to talk a little bit about the concept of darshan of Krishna. I feel very strongly that we need to engage our mind with this. Seeing Krishna in what is called Sakshat Darshan. There is a verse at the beginning of the Bhagavatam, which I have for you here. I'm not so much a computer expert that I can share to what it's called screen sharing, but we can nevertheless hear the verse. Vidyate hridayagrante chityante sarvasamshaya chiyante chasya karmani drishtaevat manishvare. Thus, by this sadhana, by this regular spiritual practice, the knot in the heart is pierced and all my misgivings are cut to pieces. The chain of fruitive actions is terminated when one sees the Lord as master. So it is said by this sadhana, the doubts are removed. What doubt? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, the doubt that, will I be able to attain Krishna? This is a doubt in our life. It is removed by the regular spiritual practice. You think, yes, it's very well possible. And it is also said, the Lord makes his spurti. Spurti means his sudden appearance in the heart or in the mind, by just coming to you in the mind. A very good example of this is Narada Muni. I think you all remember his amazing story. He had lost his mother due to a snake bite. And when he saw that he had no protector, his father had died long ago, and his mother was dead, and he was a young boy. When he saw, I have no protector, he understood, I must find the Lord. He's my only protector. And he left the village and became a wandering monk. His journey is beautifully described, how he walked through the lands, through the towns, through the forests. Sometimes he walked a mountainous path. Then again, he found himself in the deep forest. And on the way, he had heard earlier in his life from a few saints about the process of bhakti, of shravanam and kirtanam. So he did this. He had received a mantra. And finally, he thought, what is this wandering? I will not find the Lord outside. I have to find him inside. And he sat down under a sacred banyan tree and began to meditate. He focused his mind on the Lord. And it's very nicely described how he then cut the knot in the heart, which closes the temple of the heart, so to say, our temple, heart, is a place where the Lord can manifest. It's called the Dara Akash, the Dara Akash, the inner space, or the Hridai Mandiri in Bengali, the temple of the heart, or the Hrid Mandir in Sanskrit. No? This temple is locked. There's a very heavy lock, which is very difficult to open. The key is very rare to this lock, because it's the lock of the false ego. But that lock has to be opened, only then the door of the temple of the heart opens and we can meet Krishna. This key, which opens the lock of the false ego, the Hridaya Granthi, it's also called the knot, the heavy lock, is the key of bhakti, the processes of bhakti, which you do. And if you do them conscientiously and alertly, then you feel so relieved when that door opens and you can move further. So by meditation, in Narada Muni's case, he opened this. And he describes, when I meditated about the lotus feet of the Lord, my mind became overwhelmed with prema, and tears came in my eyes because of my longing, my keen longing for him. Rupa Goswami expresses this with this gesture. My index finger is in my mouth. This is how keen I am, how eager I am. So, Narada Muni, his eyes filled with tears. He was so eager when he meditated about the Lord. He thought, when will I be able to see the Lord? Then, suddenly, this is in the Bhagavata, step by step by step, the Lord made his appearance in the mind and also before the eyes of Narada Muni. The first step was Narada Muni could all of a sudden feel a divine fragrance filling the atmosphere. Just imagine you are walking through a forest and you come all of a sudden to a section of the forest where there's a divine fragrance. And I've often seen this in India. You walk and then, wow, there's such a fragrance. It usually comes from, there is a flower which is extremely fragrant. It is the night blooming jasmine flower. I believe it's called Mogra, but I'm not 100% sure. It's a night blooming jasmine flower. The English name is called Queen of the Night. So when you come close to one of these bushes, wow, it's really, you go like, wow, this is a good smell here. So in the same way, Narada Muni's nostrils became suddenly overwhelmed by the fragrance from the Lord's limbs. And we have heard about this in Rupa Goswami. He says, when will the bee of my mind smell, or the bee of my nose, when will the bee of my nose smell the fragrance that defeats all other fragrances, even the best smells in this world? Then the Lord came with a second step. His second step was Narada Muni could hear the tinkling of the anchor bells, the divine sound of Krishna. Rupa Goswami also prays in his composition, when will I hear the sound of the divine sound, the sound of Radharani playing her veena, which is so beautiful, that Krishna, who plays on his flute, becomes momentarily overwhelmed with appreciation and just stops playing on his flute. It drowns out the sound of Krishna's flute. And then the last thing is the third step in which the Lord manifests before Narada Muni, after manifesting his fragrance and the beautiful sound of his ankle bells as he is approaching and walking towards his devotee. The last manifestation is the beautiful face of Krishna. He is described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in the 18th chapter, verse 65 of the Gita, that your face, I meditate about your face, which is like the beautiful full moon, surrounded by the locks of your curly hair. And then I meditate particularly on your merciful glances, how you look mercifully upon me and showering nectar upon me that is totally drowning my material attachments. I I see your glances of mercy. Maybe you know they are, for sure you know they are prayers for the glance of Krishna. Please look at me, or to Radha Rani. You know, Muninda Vinda Vandite Tiloka Shoka Harini Prasanna Vaktra Pankaje Nikunya Bhuvilasini Vrajendra Bhanu Nandini Vrajendra Suno Sangate Kadakarisya Siyamang Kripa Kataksha Pajanam. The devotee asks, oh, when my lord, oh Radharani, you remove the miseries of the three worlds, you remove it, you take it away. When, oh when, will your sidelong glance fall upon me? Because the moment I'm blessed by your glance from your beautiful face, then this is the perfection of my life. So so my point is here, Narada Muni is describing in the opening verses, it's in the second chapter of the Bhagavatam, his realization of full realization of Krishna's mercy. He had left his home and he had gone on a journey, and persistently, that means continuously or very regularly, applied the processes of bhakti. He says, it was personally experienced by me that when one chants your holy name, you manifest in the core of my heart as if called for. No? That this is personal experience. He's not talking theory, he's talking experience. These are descriptions of the darshan of the Lord. Here in our Sangha Mela, we have this beautiful opportunity to have, after the presentations, the darshan of Radha Madan Mohan. And maybe you also experience when you can relax on your seat and have a prayerful mood, this darshan of Radha Madan Mohan, even though it is through the computer, gives you confidence in your spiritual life that everything will be all right. The doubts fall aside. The Lord becomes more manifested. Today I want to speak about seeing Krishna. Because that's a big, big subject of Utkala Valari, and it is a big subject of the Bhagavatam. There is a verse 39, where Rupa Goswami prays for a very particular, beautiful darshan, an amazing darshan. You will really like this. He says, Kasya sambhavati hatat ahu aharva yatravam prabhuvaro kalagiti unamang maduri momi samrida duskritam shravana yo vidunoti. Oh, excellent couple. Oh, excellent divine couple, most beloved, most desired, most wonderful divine couple, when will that day arise? when your soft singing, which is full of waves of sweetness, when will that destroy the impurity of my ears? In music, you must know there is the greatest art is the art of singing. First, Rupa Goswami wanted to hear the flute with the anchor bells, then the veena of Radharani, which stifles the sounds of Krishna's flute, and finally he wants to hear the sweet singing of Radha and Krishna. The word which he uses here is Kalagiti. Kalagiti refers to a song without words and sentences. There's only a melody, and the melody, he says, is rising in sweetness. It becomes sweeter and sweeter, and it removes all sinful inclinations of the heart. Kalagiti, a particular way of singing the aspara sounds. I will attempt to sing for you a little bit like this, but please do not laugh and please feel great satisfaction with my attempt to show you what it is. I want to show you the rising wave of music. I'm not so good, as you know, but you know, and it flies and flies, the melodies from the mouth. It comes from the heart, it goes through the vocal cords, and it expresses the deep, deep emotions. This is Kalagiti, the sounds which have no words to them, and no sentences, but who say so much, and when we can hear them, then it removes sins. Gokrishna, who is a little bit was interested in his youth to study classical music, Indian classical music, and there are amazing ways of singing, of making the melodies rise and so on. And I would like to sing it more perfectly, but I just wanted to give you some ideas. So as Radha Madhava walks through the forest of Vrindavan, the trees are full of blossoming flowers, and there is a soft breeze that comes from the Yamuna. It is cooling because of the cooling water, and it carries the fragrance of the honey which does drop from these beautiful flowers. This of course attracts many, many bees who hum and fly around the flowers and the bunches of flowers. And amongst these bees, there's one particular bird who has a very, very, very sweet voice, especially when he eats the bud of those mango trees. It's the cuckoo. When the cuckoo in springtime, eats the bud from a mango tree, his voice becomes very, very beautiful. I was walking this year from Suryakund through the beautiful landscape of Vrindavan. It was a long walk. I think it took 3 hours before I reached the next village, Radhakund. And I noticed the trees were full of parrots and birds. And then I heard amongst all these birds this beautiful, sweet sound. Coo-hoo, coo-hoo, coo-hoo. And it was very, very sweet. And I thought, wow, this must be the cuckoo. So I walked very slowly. And I looked. How was I? Yes, I looked to my left side. And there was a nice little meadow, grass, green thing, and there were trees around. And on it, I saw the most beautiful cuckoo which I had seen. It was a big cuckoo, maybe this size. He had a very black chest, which was shining, like Krishna's limbs are shining. And then brown feathers, no, brown wings, you know, wings with which it is was flying. And it made this amazing sound, and it became aware of me, and it started to walk swiftly over the meadows. And then I thought, oh, the cuckoo is uncomfortable in my presence, and I quickly walked on to not disturb it any further. But it was singing very sweetly, and this so in the Vrindavan forest there are these beautiful udipans. Then Radha Madhava come to the banks of the Yamuna, and they see how the Yamuna carries these beautiful flowers. There's this flower called Kalahara flower, and there are many swans which warble, make their sound, and also many different ducks and cranes. And Radha Madhava are all alone. They have placed their arms on each other's shoulders, and they illuminate the banks of the Yamuna by their golden and bluish luster. No, we heard just a little before how Srimati Radharani is compared by Rupa Goswami with a streak of lightning in a dark blue rain cloud. So they are there, and they sing to each other. It is described their singing is so sweet that it is categorized as the Madana Gana. Madana Gana means intoxicating songs. This time, Srimati Radharani does not choose to sing this ascending, towering songs, the Kalagiti, which we have heard in the beginning, songs without words and sentences, but she sings something to Krishna. Here I will not try to imitate, because it would really not be appropriate. She sings, "I consider you dearer to me than my life 100 times over. You are my friend from our childhood onwards. I have been considered by my mothers to be the dearmost beloved." You know, my mother thought, "Oh, Radha, you are my most beloved." "And I have many girlfriends who consider me as dear as their life. But Krishna, in comparison to your love, and the love which I feel for you, the love of my mother, the love of my Sakis, is not as big, because you're the friend of my life. As you know, we function due to the pranas working within our body, and you are so intimately connected with me. You are so close to me, like the pranas. You are the blackish eyeliner on my eyes and the ornament of my body. And I must sing to you that I constantly, without any interruption, keep your lotus feet in the core of my heart. So this is Radharani's song. It's a song full of love. My mother loves me, my girlfriends love me, but their love in comparison to what you feel for me and what I feel for you is insignificant, because you are so close to me, closer than my mother and my girlfriends even. You are the friend of my life, as you are the friend of my heart. This is what Radha sings to Krishna, and Krishna sings a similar song. This song, I repeat it to you, is composed by the great Vaishnav Gyanadas. Oh, I have the song of Krishna. Listen, O Radha, I do not think of anyone else but you. I cannot remain calm in your absence. When I repeat your name and when I meditate on your form, I become so enlivened. My mind runs to any direction from which I hear the sound of Shri Radhe, Shri Radhe. I must run there where I hear the sound. I look at your moon-like face like the Chataka bird who subsists by drinking the rays from the moon. That is actually the Chakora bird, and the Chataka bird is the one who subsists on rainwater. I raise my head and I loudly call out, Radha, Radha. Then I save my life. Vrindavan Das Thakur says about the song of Krishna, which Rupa Goswami wants to hear, I take my flute in my hand and I cry out loud, Radhe, Radhe. As long as I don't see you, only when I hear the sound of your anchor bells as you approach me, does my mind find peace. So yes, Rupa Goswami prays for the darshan, the full darshan, with sound, with fragrance, with all the different items of the Lord. And my dear devotees, ultimately our Krishna conscious practice should have this darshan, because only by the darshan the sinful tendencies, the deep rooted material desires, or whatever is disturbing to the heart will go. The darshan can be first made by going to the beautiful deities. I have another deity photo here. This is Radha Syam Sunda. When you chant, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, sit before the deities or a picture of the deities. Meditate about the beautiful form of the Lord, and that will give the heart its fulfillment. There's a God-shaped vacuum in the heart, and it can only be filled not by a new computer, not by any type of successes in the material world, but only by the beautiful form of Radha and Krishna that is there. We sometimes think, yes, later, in the future, it will automatically come. But let us not forget, this will come as a result of regular installments of your spiritual activities. In Vaishnavism, we are Krishna-centered. When we live in the temple, we get up early when Radha and Krishna get up. They are still in their pyjamas, no? There's an offering when they take their breakfast. And the deity worship in the temple follows the activities of Radha and Krishna in the spiritual world. And by coming aware of what Radha and Krishna do, my dear devotees, you will see the real life starts. Not the covered life, not the life under the influence of the modes of material nature. And practically, I can only say as a recommendation, read, for instance, these prayers or any other good prayers. Bring your mind close to the mind of these great acharyas. Isn't it when we hear a person's expression, when we do not reject them outright, then our mind becomes in some ways shaped by what they say. We take it to heart. And taking to heart the prayers of Rupa Goswami and the other acharyas is necessary in order to completely understand the science of Krishna consciousness. Let me end with reading to you what Prabhupada said, and then I will make a little meditation, and then we will be able to have questions and answers. There are many theories about God, but all these different speculations are at once cleared off. As soon as Sri Krishna is realized in truth by the process of Bhakti Yoga. Sri Krishna is like the sun, and the materialistic speculations about Krishna or about the Absolute Truth are like the darkest midnight. As soon as the Krishna sun is arisen within one's heart, the darkness of material speculations about the Absolute Truth and the living being are at once cleared off. In the presence of the sun, the darkness cannot stand. And the relative truth that were hidden in the deep darkness of ignorance become clearly manifested by the mercy of Krishna, who is residing in everyone's heart as the Super Soul. When you are becoming aware of these beautiful prayers and you move closer to Krishna, the result is that Krishna will come closer to you. I would like to now do my little New Year's meditation with you on the computer. What do you think? Isn't it nectarian to hear about Krishna personally? Because at that time, our doubts, our inner darkness becomes removed. And by the powerful words of the acharyas who are describing Krishna, oh, we become relieved and so on. But we can also follow the process of Narada Muni, who went through the forest and sat down and to meditate. And I want to do this now with you. I want to help you with this meditation to find a little bit also your, let me say, an inspiring vision about your future. After all, the year comes, 2022, and we do need to pump some spiritual energy into it, because we hear from astrology that this year, the coming year, it is more tolerable than the years which lie past us, which lie behind us. But we will need to do these regular installments of our spiritual practice to keep our head over the water. Good. So I request you to sit comfortably. Just try to just stretch a little bit. I always like to roll up the shoulders. To widen the chest, this will be good for breathing. And take a few deep and relaxing breaths. On your next exhale, get ready and close your eyes. When you're ready, relax the lower part of your body, feet, knees, thighs, your sitting bones, relax them. Sit erect or tall with your upper body, back of the back, lower back, upper back, chest and belly, and relax. The shoulders, both of your arms and down to your hands, relax. The back of your head, top of your head and forehead, relax. Places where your eyes are set, these little eye caves. Relax. The inside of your mouth and the jaw. Relax. Appreciate how everything is totally relaxed. Lower body, upper body. And head. Focus on a gentle and smooth flowing breath. In and out. Although the body is relaxed, your mind is alert and conscious. You really feel in your mind, feel how you're inhaling and exhaling. Now, as you deepen the body's relaxation, let everything that is going on in your life gently disappear. Your busyness, your job, your various duties, gone. Your plans, for now, gone. Your various relationships, gone. Your concerns or worries, gone. Let whatever wants to arise, arise. Feelings. If there are any thoughts, let them be, and then let them gently go. No need to dwell on them. Now it's just you and your breath. Simply observe your breath as it flows in and out. In and out. Be with your breath. You are completely by yourself and with yourself. Absolutely safe and free from the covers or layers that cover who you truly are. From there, just make a quick go through your past year, the year which lies behind you. See if there is anything that stood out for you. Maybe a journey somewhere. Maybe a conversation. Maybe some insight. come back to the 31st of December 2021, but don't stay there. Move forward into the year ahead of you. How would you like to live? What would you like to draw into your life? Maybe something in relationship to your relationships, to friends, to close ones. See the situation you would like to have. Walk into the house of the future and go through the rooms. Maybe the relationship room. Maybe a more ideal life or service. Perhaps a journey which is possible. Perhaps a state of consciousness that is desirable. Stay in this house of the future for a little bit more and try to be aware of what is in the rooms that lie in this house of the future. Remain in the here and now and ask yourself, who am I when everything that is not me is removed? And what is the life, if I could choose it, that I would like to have in my devotional practice, in my Krishna conscious life, in the times to come? Stay a little bit in this space. Very well then. It's time to gently return into the house of the presence, or let us say into the present moment, before your computer G. I wish you a very, very, very spirited, very enthusiastic, and a very blessed 2022. Thank you all very much. Indeed, it has been a pleasure to be with you. Let us see. I know you need a little time now to come back. But if there are already some questions and our Gaurahari is not in Samadhi, well, almost, but you're there. I saw you. Yes. Maybe you have some questions, something about what you have heard. The meditation, it is good to just let it stay like this. With these meditations, we just put some seeds of awareness into our heart. And from there, whatever Krishna wishes will develop and grow. Hare Krishna, Hare Bo.
Thank you very much, Kumar. It's valuable to take a little time for reflection like this, how we want to change in the future. I appreciate very much what you said of take away who I am when everything that is not me is taken away. Very, very beautiful. Thank you. And we will go for questions. We have some time ahead. And His Holiness Krishna Kshetra Swami has mentioned that he has a question for you.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. I did not know, Maharaj, that you are there. Please manifest your video. Yes, here I can see.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Well, after your meditation, I sort of hate to, you know, break the mood.
No, I'm sure it will be useful.
Well, it has to do with the subject of darshan, which you've nicely presented in the context of Srila Rupa Goswami's prayers. I'm just remembering something you've pointed out in some talk in the past, that a special trademark contribution of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur was the idea that it's not so much that we should strive to see Krishna, but rather we should serve in such a way that Krishna sees us. And so there's, and it's pointed out even by mundane scholars that traditionally darshan, when you go in the temple, is more about being seen by the deity than seeing. And yet, we hear, we read Srila Rupa Goswami aspiring to see, and we hear of Narada Muni seeing the Lord. And as I think through descriptions of the Lord's darshan in the Bhagavatam, maybe you can tell me of something there, but I don't know of any specifically passages where that emphasis is made, that the Lord is seeing the devotee. It always seems like the devotee is seeing the Lord. Maybe you have some thoughts on this. That's all.
Thank you so very, very much. Yes. There are these two poles, really. The Leela of Krishna, which is celebrated every day for a whole month, is the Damodar Leela. During this time we sing the songs of Satyavrata Muni, the verses of Satyavrata Muni, as they are found in the Padma Purana. And there he says, my only wish is to have your form of Bal Govinda, this child Krishna, manifest in my heart. I don't care for any sadhanas, I don't care for this and that, and I want to see that form which has red he has black hair, but there's a little red, because your shoulder kisses his face and kisses also the head. So yes, my only desire is to see that. That will be the fulfillment of my eyes. And on the other hand, we hear so much about don't ask to see the Lord. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, be seen by the Lord. I remember one time he went to take darshan, as we say, in his Radha Gandavika, no, Gandavika Giridhari in Mayapur, in his mart, and it had a very difficult, there was only, you know, a very small place from where you could actually see the Lord. You couldn't see him from the sides very nicely, not like in Goloka Dham, where you can stand around. And one servant saw that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was standing there in a not such good angle. And he said, Guru Maharaj, you can't see very nicely. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, what can these eyes matter see? The point is we need to be seen by the Lord. So yes, there are these two contradictory statements. I believe for those who want to who come from the material world like all of us, we cannot demand really to see directly the form. We find this in always in the prayers of the great acharyas. They may express them their desire, but then they say, who am I and what are these impossible desires, and so on. And therefore we try to rather please the Lord so that he will see us, you know, by our service we raise our hand so that he will get our video picture on his computer, and we can, and he will look from us. So that's what a conditioned soul should always keep in mind, that I cannot demand this, I cannot all I can see is hopefully the Lord's merciful glance falls on me because he is pleased by my service. This is really the fundamental mood which a devotee in this world needs to have, needs to cultivate, needs to maintain, needs to remain aware of. It's also the mood which gives him solace, because yes, I may not see, I'm still blind, but the Lord hopefully sees me or hears my kirtans, my japa, and so on. But as the devotee cultivates this entry mood, so to say, in bhakti, this humble mood, this mood is, where am I in comparison to the great devotees who are full of bhava and who have not yet met Krishna? As you enter through this door, then mysteriously, paradoxically, you feel how your heart becomes inflamed with desires. It is natural. I think we as devotees feel this, that we feel, oh, from time to time, I must really accelerate my devotional service. I have not much time. Oh, Krishna, who's Krishna actually? Where will I get to know about him? And we begin to pick up books like the Krishna book and or this book, it will happen automatically, and we will say, I can't believe that I'm reading this. I used to be such a so interested in this and that, but now I want to really know about Krishna, some more Krishna. Every sadhaka in this world knows this, but he only gets to come there, to this space, when he is humbly and consciously entering through the door of humility, where he understands, I have no adhika, I have no qualification, and then this comes. So although from outside it looks like a paradox, on one side don't see, don't desire to see Krishna, and on the other side cut the heart. As soon as the knot in the heart is cut, one can have the darshan of the Lord, and one should aspire for that. Although it looks like two contradictory desires, it's not. One is the entry gate into bhakti, and the other is slowly developing mood of ruchi, which is a taste and yearning, which comes. This is my understanding. So, in unfortunately, or let us say, because we are used to Aristotelian logic, we don't bring the two together so easily. Like, the big one for me is Achintya Bheda Abheda Tattva. The Lord is different, but he's also the same with everything. We always pick one thing out of these statements, and then it's almost like, do you remember these paintings where you see something and it looks from at one time like two vases confronting each other, standing next to each other, and if you look again, you see two persons facing each other. But the mind cannot see two at once. It can see either the two vases or the two persons. I think many, many things in spiritual life are like this. There are two sides of it. I will end. That's why I see this in you also, and in other of my exalted God brothers. Sometimes we find in ISKCON opposing viewpoints on one thing. Is bhakti inherited, or is it inherent? And it's a lot of what if it is both? We find opposing cons. Prabhupada said this. No, Prabhupada said that. What if he said both? To describe what is beyond the grasp of the mind, and so on. This is my humble attempt. Sorry, when when one is speaking, one becomes a little enlivened, and I'm a little bit excited. I hope, I feel always you're such a gentleman, and sometimes my excitement is so overbearing, but I think you know I'm just enthusiastic.
Yes, we all appreciate it. Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Yes, Hare Krishna, Gurhari.
We have, I think we have a little bit more time for one or two more questions. So I will read it one here. I have it. This is from Mataji Madhavi Manjari. And it's also connected nicely with the lecture of today. And the question is, are there different chambers in our heart, dear Maharaj? I know you have mentioned two gatekeepers whom we should take shelter, the land of Vrindavan and Tulsi Maharani, to really enter devotional fertile land within our heart? Are there different chambers we need to pass before we can reach inner sanctum, sanctorium, where our dear Supreme Couple resides?
There are different spiritual imageries. The image is one of the sacred space. Now, various religious people have extended this analogy, which is common to all many religious or spiritual traditions. They have extended this analogy. Someone, for instance, like Teresa of Avila and John of the Cross, they speak about that there are indeed different rooms or chambers which you pass through as you come to the inner apartment where God resides and the soul resides. Although I'm not aware of an identical image in Vaishnava philosophy or Vaishnava practice of, you know, in different chambers in the heart through which you walk, almost like different rooms in a castle before you come to the most special room. Although I'm not aware, we are obviously aware of various stages in spiritual life, and whether you say different chambers, where there are different tests maybe, or different you need different qualifications to go into one after the other. You have that also in stages, you know, that it starts with it starts with a practice which is without taste, and then there are various forms of the practice. It is meeting devotees, starting your spiritual practice, and then becoming free from anattas, and then you move on to developing steadiness and so on. So there are gradations, and I think that is definitely there. That is definitely there, and it is important that you know where you are, so to say. And if you want to use to have the imagery of chambers, in which chamber are you, and what is the next stage to become qualified? There's a very interesting purport of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I can only recite this now from memory, but it appears in Shivaram Maharaj's book about Sankalpas, a recent book of his. And there Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the sadhaka must know where he is now and what is the next state he should achieve. And mostly, and if you don't know this, you don't move forward. You can. You need an honest introspection in the heart to see where you are now and what is the next step. And here I would like to say, mostly you know it because it's right before your eyes. It's right before your eyes. Oh, yeah, I should work a little bit on steady practice. I'm so flimsical. I'm sometimes doing, sometimes I'm neglecting my spiritual practice. So, you know, this is this. Or you feel like I know I should get up earlier, because then I can get can do my spiritual practice. But for this, I will have to stop watching internet in the evening, because that takes my resting time away from me. So you do know what, if you're a little sincere and honest, you do know where are the tasks which you have to do. But Krishna Das Kaviraj Thakur speaks of the garden of the heart, there is a statement, a sincere devotee will know where the weed is that he needs to uproot now, next. It is shown to you when you are sincere. And my dear devotees, when you are dealing with the things which you can recognize, which are right before your eyes, then the hidden things which you cannot see yet become revealed. Let me repeat this. When through honest introspection and Krishna consciousness we deal with the tasks that are right before us, then they give way and we can see what was hidden before us. But if we don't deal with what is now to be dealt with, something which we know, if we are honest, it's right before our eyes and we know it, then we don't open this and take these obstacles away. Things will remain closed, and the more subtle truth of devotional service will remain hidden before us. So recognize and deal what is right before your eyes, and the hidden things which you don't know yet will become revealed in due course of time. So yes, the idea of different chambers in the heart, as it is presented in various traditions, good traditions, there's spiritual insights in this. That idea is there in Vaishnavism as the different steps which you need to do on your journey from Shraddha of faith to Prema. Good. So Gaurahari, I see there is one. Should we have more questions? You are our master.
We could. I think today we are the 31st. We can take the luxury of going a little bit over time, and it's not so late, and people stay overnight up to midnight usually on the 31st. If I may take the opportunity to ask you myself one small question.
Yes.
I think it was very, very clear throughout your seminar about the importance to receive the proper association, and especially through prayers. But when we see we have such a large amount of prayers, we have and how would you advise us to go through? Should we read one prayer a day? Should we memorize it by heart? Should we at least once a week? What would you suggest as really that would be the most efficient for everyone to enter deep into those prayers and meditations?
Yeah, isn't it? There are so many good prayers. And then pray to Lord Nityananda, pray to Advaita Acharya, pray to Gadadhara Pandit. When you read all these, where do I start and what do I do from all this? There is one godbrother of Srila Prabhupada who was very close to Srila Prabhupada. He's a great philosopher. He has left the planet since a long time, and he was very close to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and he used to visit Prabhupada regularly in Prabhupada's home in Calcutta. And he has given an answer to this question: what should I read? What should I pray? Where should I focus at this time? With a very beautiful analogy, which has always remained my guiding force. It is that a sincere devotee should look for the guidance in the heart. We can also say, I liked very much Krishna Chaitanya Maharaj's approach, where he said we should ask a question to ourselves, and then usually things will come up. He gave the example of these migrating birds who follow an inner compass, which really is the super soul in the heart, as they move on. To put it very straight before you, Gaurahari, in your spiritual life, you will see, well, this is now something I should focus on. This is something which is right before my eyes, or so on. I have, for instance, a prayer which I chant regularly. It's from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It is in the category of, you call it in English, the it's an entreaty. It's a sincere request to Radha and Krishna, and I feel just drawn to this. Just make sure that these are prayers that are coming in your spiritual line, you know, in your tradition and so on, because we want to approach Krishna by this. But yes, there are general recommendations. First read the Bhagavad Gita, there are prayers in there. Then read the Bhagavatam, there are prayers in the whole world in the Bhagavatam. Then go to Chaitanya Charitamrita. There are these general recommendations, but there is also the other recommendation. When something strikes you, or you see something, then you should follow that. Trust in the super soul. I have many quotes. Devotees send me always quotes, and I'm overwhelmed. Krishna is in your heart, just to make you turn to him. You know, Krishna will talk to you. If you are a sincere devotee, what will the Lord do? Will he talk or will he not talk? He doesn't talk to a nonsense, but he talks to a devotee. Prabhupada, in the Bhagavad Gita commentary also, he says, when a devotee cannot take full advantage of his spiritual master and so on, there's still the Lord in the heart who can help him. You can find this in the verse, in the 10th chapter, Tesham Satata Yuktanam, in the purport. Oda Tesham Evanukam Patam. That's one of the two. You can find it. So, yes, let us follow our devotional intuition when it comes to that. You know, if you cannot force yourself to pray. You can force yourself, of course, to chant your 16 rounds and whatever number of rounds you chant. But prayer is something that requires a little freedom. I also think you cannot force someone to become healthy. You know, this is not possible. By force, how can you become healthy? Like this. Oh, I'm forced. It doesn't work. You, in praying also, you can't force yourself. You have to see where you are attracted and what nourishes your soul.